Baby, you are gonna go broke showing turkeys like these.
It's turkey time. Gobble, gobble.
Anyone in close proximity has the same dream.
What is it?
A secret that can no longer be kept. It started a month ago.
What started?
A change in the earth and the sky. His power.
There's a weird locking mechanism. Looks like it can only be opened from the inside.
A life form is growing out of prebiotic fluid. It's not winding down into disorder. It's self-organizing. It's becoming something. What?
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Let's Talk Turkeys, the great podcast about bad movies. I'm your host, Movie Miss, and I'm being joined this week by my co-host, Drivin' Dave. How are you doing today, sir?
Pretty good. Hola, amigos, to all the people listening.
To our Spanish audience. So are you excited about our movie this week?
Yes, I am a huge fan of Carpenter, so I'm looking forward to discussing this, and I'm gonna try not to rip it apart too much.
Oh no, please do. I'll defend, and I know our guest will defend. And speaking of guests, he's waiting in the wings. Let's bring him in. An all-around horror fan, but you know, if you love Carpenter as much as we do, we had to have you on. Everybody, please welcome to the show, Ted. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Nice to
Are
be here.
Are you excited? Thank you. It's good to have you here.
I'm very excited to be here.
So how are you feeling about this movie this week? We're doing Prince of Darkness from 1987.
It's one of my favorite Carpenter movies, I think. Everyone goes to Halloween and The Fog, but I kind of think this was his most fertile period, from like Big Trouble in Little China through They Live. And this was right in the center of that.
Okay. I would agree with that. Actually, I think this is an overlooked gem in his collection. We're discussing it today because A, spooky season, and this movie is a little bit spooky, but B, because it's a turkey. Rotten Tomato critics of 61%, audience of 61. So it just inches over the 60. So I'm counting it as a turkey because we had to talk about it. This movie's great.
Yes, it is.
So it had a budget of $3 million, and it did a box office of 14.2. So people went to see it, which I was surprised to find out, honestly.
I remember the opening weekend. It was really, there were people there. It did well, at least the shows I went to.
Oh, so were you going to horror like regularly in the 80s? Were you enjoying all these and soaking them up?
I was horror boy. I graduated from high school in 81, right at the peak of it. In 87, I was actually managing a record store and we had a video department. So it's like every day these treasures were coming in that I was sneaking home before a customer ever got to look at them. I was like emerged. I was obsessed. I was totally head over everything into horror at that time.
That was the 80s was such a good period for horror. I was a teenager in the 80s and early 90s, and it was one after another. And I worked in a video store as well, a couple of them. And I'm with you. The second I saw something come in, I was like, oh, I've got to watch this. And then I could recommend it, though, to people was the big part of that, right? You could be like, oh, you've got to watch this one.
You could find a movie that no one ever heard of and go, here, try Slaughterhouse Rock. And then you'd apologize for it 2 days later, but there'd be something better that you could give them.
And you also probably were known as the horror guy. Like, ooh, if you want good horror, go ask Ted for a recommendation.
That was me.
Nice. So, Dave, you're a little young. You didn't work at a video store. Do you feel like, though, that would have been something fun for you? Like, you could have been born like 10 years earlier and really enjoyed that culture? Or do you think that would not have been for you? Like video stores and VHS tapes and all that?
Oh, I would have loved it. Because, I mean, like, I was born right when he got out of high school. So I was like, you know, I missed that era. I had to go back and experience everything. I even got like the tail end of the video stores. You know, we had like three or four video stores locally, and I got them for like a couple of years, and then they went out of business. And then now you're stuck with Netflix and everything. So I would have loved to work at a video store, and I would have loved to like go see these movies in the 80s. I'm really growing to appreciate how much the 80s gave us of how much good films, like not just horror, but like just movies in general, the greatest stuff seems to have come out of the 80s.
We're adding one to the Gen X here. I like it.
They're not all bad.
So Prince of Darkness, written and directed by John Carpenter, one of the undisputed kings of horror. Writing credits go to Martin Quartermass, which by doing my research now, I never knew this all these years, was John Carpenter one of his pen names because he didn't want to put his name on it as a writer. And I'm not sure why. Does anybody know why?
He tried to involve Nigel Neal, who was a British sci-fi writer. And the Quartermass name actually comes from a series of Hammer movies from the late 50s through about 67 or so. And it's like, if you've ever seen, I think the American title was 5 Million Years to Earth, but in the rest of the world was Quartermass in the Pit, one of the seminal devil sci-fi movies ever. I mean, it's so cool. For 67, it was very apocalyptic. And I remember when I was a scared kid, not too many of those movies resonated with me, but there was just something about that movie scared the crap out of me, unlike most of them.
Okay. Well, I got to look that up now. So that's where he got the name from. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
And then the music on this, John Carpenter, of course, puts his music and everything and his touch on it. And Alan Howarth or Howarth?
Whatever.
Sorry, I butchered your name, sir, but you know, whatever. The music in this movie, let's talk for a minute about that. A lot of horror movies, I think, from the 80s don't have effective music. They do the gratuitous, silly music sting when they want you to, you know, jump or be scared. But the soundtracks and the scores usually aren't that great. This one works for me. Carpenter's simplicity and then how they kind of ratchet it up a little in this film of his, it really works for me. And I think it works well for the film. What do you guys think?
I think it kind of harkens back to a lot of the same themes and motifs that he used in The Thing. The percussive electric repeating beat, and he's used that in other movies since, but it was especially effective in this one.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of like how, like his movies, he's really able to use the music perfectly to kind of set this tone. He really kind of like gives you the vibe of what's going on when you want it, when he wants it to be creepy. It feels like you're kind of like there. It feels creepy. And it's just that, and it's like I said, it's such a simplistic beat to it. He's not like overdoing it. You don't have this huge orchestral production going. It's just like, you know, you picture him just at a piano or something, and it really works.
So shot in Los Angeles, California over about 30 days. And I really laughed when I was doing the research and I came across this. Oh my gosh, not one, but two bug wranglers were employed for this film.
Can never have enough bug wranglers on a movie like this.
I was like, really? Really? I get. So as we get into the plot, we'll point out obviously why, but that cracked me up. Two bug wranglers. Could you imagine having that? Well, I can't because I don't like bugs, but what a great job.
Yeah, I couldn't do that either.
Yeah, like who wakes up and decides that's their passion in life? You know what? I really have to wrangle bucks. That's my calling in life is to wrangle bucks.
I think I'd be better suited as a rat guy than a bug guy.
A rat guy. They need to get you on Willard, the remake. So this film actually won an award in 1988, the year after it was released. It won a Critics Award at Fantastic Fest, which I thought for sure when I read it won an award, it was going to be like a Golden Raspberry or something. It was an actual legit Good Job Carpenter Award.
It was worthy.
So top billed cast for Prince of Darkness, we have Donald Pleasance, Jameson Parker, Victor Wong, Lisa Blount, and Dennis Dunn. We can get to everybody else as we go. A lot of these faces, though, honestly, I just went to the cinema and saw They Live for the re-release. And a lot of these faces are John Carpenter favorites. And I love that when a director has loyalty and he uses the same people over and over. Sam Raimi does the same thing. A lot of directors do it. I felt like Donald Pleasance was perfect casting in this because it was giving me total Loomis vibes. How did you guys feel about the casting in this overall?
Totally Loomis. It was just Loomis by a different name.
Yeah, I agree. It's like Donald Pleasance is just such a bad pun, but such a pleasant person to watch. I think the only time I ever saw him like where he's not Loomis is when he was in Escape from New York. That's the only time where he like just goes away from the whole Loomis character.
Where he's the president from another country, but he's the president of the U.S.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I can still hear the whole I'm the Duke of New York.
You know, know, I just watched that movie for the first time like 2 years ago. I had never seen it. And of course, I watched the sequel.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hey, I had to because I'm a completionist and I was like, I gotta know. And it was as awful as promised.
The poster was the best thing about it. And the poster was nothing to write home about either.
Oh, the poster for this one's amazing. Prince of Darkness. I just got the Shout Factory Blu-ray release of this not long ago. And they had the new artwork and it's really fucking rad. Like all the green slime on it and stuff.
I've been watching it on the Craptastic Image DVD from about 97. It's like, this thing is atrocious. The quality sucks. There are no extras. I'm going to have to upgrade.
You do need to upgrade because there are only a couple extras, but they're worth it. Like an interview with Carpenter, a recent one. Yeah, totally worth it. All right. So let's jump into this. The IMDb plot. A group of graduate students and scientists uncover an ancient canister in an abandoned church, but when they open the container, they inadvertently unleash a strange liquid and an evil force on all of humanity. I don't think that delivers what it's promising.
No, it was not the terrifying thermos full of antifreeze that, you know, we were promised. We got better.
I'll take that. I just thought it was funny that they were like released on all of humanity. Well, it's not really. No.
They're released on 16 people in LA.
Yeah. Yes, some hobos.
I love when they describe it because it's like they always get the movie wrong usually. And it's just so much fun to like see how much different the actual movie is.
Totally. All right. Let's jump into the plot. So our movie begins with studio credits and a shot of a full moon, and we get that ominous Carpenter music. We get a shot of an old man. Even though I've seen this 100 times, I'm going to go off of first impressions. Like first time I saw it, you assume it's a priest dying in his bed, and he's got a small, like a lockbox he's holding on his chest. And first time viewing, I was confused by this opening scene. I didn't know what we were looking at, really. I wish it would have been a little bit more to the scene for setting the stage, if that makes sense.
It's like you were joined midway.
Yes. Thank you. That's a good way to put it. All my rambling and you said it in a couple of words. Yes. I feel like we now join Prince of Darkness already in progress. So then we get title card and then we cut to away from that college campus where we see a man with a glorious 80s mustache.
Glorious.
It was porn-tastic.
Yes, I wrote that in my notes in big capital letters, porn stash. And it changes throughout the film, which makes me laugh too, because I'm wondering, was it reshoots? Did he shave it at one point and they had to put a fake one on? Like, I wasn't sure what was happening, but this is Jameson Parker and he was on a TV show in the 80s. And I can't remember.
Simon and Simon.
Yes, thank you. And who was his co-host on that? The other guy with the mustache.
Gerald McCraney.
And he was married to Delta Burke, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're old, Dave. Sorry. Excuse us.
You lost me after Simon and Simon. I know that. And the rest of it, I was just like, okay.
So Simon and Simon. So that he was, that I assume that was during this time period or had it ended by 86? Do you know?
I think it was shortly after this.
Okay. So he was doing well, riding high. He's like, I'll be in a Carpenter movie. Sure. I like it. Okay. But what I don't like is he's standing here in this quad area, leaning against a tree and stalking this redheaded female student across, talking to somebody else, just staring at her. Kind of creepy. Is it okay? Because he's not approaching her. I don't know. It's weird because you're jumping into this movie in progress.
It's okay because he's got the mustache. If you got the mustache, you can creep all you want.
And he was creeping, but not to the point where like Elliot Stabler was going to tackle him, but he was definitely waiting for her.
So we get, okay, typically I'm not a fan of the all credit sequence at the beginning of a film because I want credits over movie. I want to get going and get the action going. This movie sort of does both. It does like a combo. So we get credits during opening sequence of the movie because they cut to the black screen and we get a couple shots of different credits. Then we cut back to the movie in progress. And this goes on for a good 8-9 minutes. It's kind of weird. And I could not think of another movie where I've seen that done.
I can't either, but you're right. They did go on excessively into the movie.
I was waiting for the directed by so we could really get going.
I was waiting for it to like get to the end of the movie and we're still getting credits.
Right? Halfway through. So we get to see a nun now go into that dead priest's room that we saw at the very beginning. Donald Pleasance is there telling her that he has passed away and he left that box. Okay, a little bit of information. We're good. Then we see the priest, which is Donald Pleasance's character, is only known as priest or the priest. He doesn't get a name in this. Did you guys find that weird or was that cool?
It kind of dispensed with any need to get to know him any better. They could have just called him Donald Pleasance and I would have been cool with it.
Or Loomis. So the priest is reading something handwritten titled The Brotherhood of Sleep. He mentions, or it says something about how they had to take a vow of silence, which I was like, why does that matter? That's kind of weird, but okay.
When you mentioned that with the vow of silence and everything, like, okay, so how does that work if these priests snore?
Wow, that's overthinking it. Well, they sleep alone. How would anybody know?
And if a priest snores in the forest and there's nobody there, do we really know if he's snoring?
That's a great point. So then it also says the sleeper awakens, which we find out later means probably something with the devil juice they find in the basement. But at the moment, you're like, what?
Devil juice?
That's how it is in my notes. It's the green devil juice. Yes.
Okay.
So cut to a professor, and this is Victor Wong. He's Professor Birak, which was an unusual name. You can pick any name in the world and you choose one that's high. I have to pronounce a whole bunch of times throughout this. Thanks a lot, Carpenter.
I'm glad you said his name because I had a hard time trying to say it.
So I listened to them say it a bunch of times and then I like wrote it out as syllables, like, and it just basically looks like beer rack.
Beer rack.
Yeah, it is.
But they went to Hooters that night, like, what do we call them? And they see a pair of boobs and some beer, like, there we go.
Boobstein. No, beer rack.
I really wish it would have been Boobstein.
Right. And then we get the students' names. We've got like chicken wings and Hooters. So now he's in his class. He's doing a little lecture He's on his way to his class to do a lecture. He stops and just looks up at the sky. I didn't understand what was so strange about the sky because I lived in LA until the early 90s. And there was an orange haze all the time because of pollution. So I'm like, what is he looking at? We get a quick shot of a shit ton of ants on the ground. This is supposed to be not right or ominous in some way, I guess.
No, but they did need a second Wrangler for those ants.
They had their own assigned Wrangler.
I wonder, like, does the Wrangler, like, does he come on the set with cowboy hats and chaps and like a whip and just like, yah, ants, yah.
The ant Wrangler or the roach Wrangler? Who gets more money?
My guess is the maggot Wrangler, because those are nasty.
Yeah.
I was going to say these Wranglers could be employed by Haywood horses, huh, Dave?
Hey, no knock on my movie.
So we get more credits as this is going. We see the priest meeting with some cardinals, I'm guessing. I don't know what they were.
Catholic officials of some sort.
Something. And he's got the mystery box and he pulls out a large key. That I guess opens the box, or from the box, sorry, that we don't know what it opens. More credits. Now we cut to the classroom where Victor Wong's professor is lecturing to about 9 people. Very small, specific class, I think, here. Do we ever find out what it is? Is it quantum physics, or what is the class?
I believe it's quantum physics.
Okay, see, I guessed. They don't actually say that, correct?
They don't.
So we get a nice close-up of Jameson Parker's mustache, which I always appreciate. I wonder if that had its own Wrangler.
It should have got its own credit.
Right? It does its own stunts, much like Tom Atkins in Halloween 3. So we cut to the priest going into a dilapidated old-looking church, which was a real church in LA. They use the key to unlock a large metal door. I'm guessing it was, again, we have to do so much guesswork. Even though I love this movie, I'm like, wow, we really have to do a lot of guesswork. Where did he learn where this church was, where this door was? Was it all in that journal from the dead priest?
I don't know, but the priest, he did know where he was going. Maybe he was part of this archdiocese in really a pretty sketchy neighborhood. So he knew.
Okay.
Why does the church have to be in a sketchy neighborhood? Like, why do you got to put this evil in the sketchy neighborhood? Why can't it have like a posh church somewhere up in, like, you know, upper Hollywood, up by, like, you know, the
Beverly
celebrities?
Hills?
Yeah, Beverly
much
Hills.
Better dressed homeless people, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to get to them. So we get more credits, and then it's nighttime now, and Mustache Man has followed the redhead across campus where he's waiting for her to come out of a building, which she just went into. Now, I'm assuming he's hoping to approach her, but his hopes get dashed when she exits the building with another man. Wah, wah.
See, apparently some people can resist the mustache.
Yeah, the other guy didn't have a mustache, so maybe she's not into that. So the priest types up a letter to someone in the science department at this university, which this was filmed at UCLA, correct? Or USC?
I think it was USC.
So he's typing up this letter and saying that he's made a discovery that they might be interested in at the science department. More credits roll. Cut to another day in Victor Wong's classroom. Professor Birak. Same few people, all in different seats. So it took me a second. I was like, is this the same crowd? It is. Same nine people. Class ends and a nun shows up to head to hand deliver the letter to the professor. Next, we see the professor go meet the priest, who begs for his help. And then final credits roll. We get directed by John Carpenter. Finally. So we cut now to Mustache Man at home playing solitaire with actual cards. This was so weird to see because he's not on his phone.
This is pre-tech.
Very nostalgic. I like that thing about the 80s movies, man, is the nostalgia. I'm like, oh, with real cards. So he looks over because he sees on his little tube TV a show about the discovery of a supernova. But then we get a quick shot to see the back of his TV covered in fire ants, I want to say, because they looked really big. How do you not notice a ton of ants on your television? I see one in my house and I freak out.
Maybe he lived next door to a bug wrangler and this was a common occurrence. He's like, Steve, get your fucking bugs out of my room.
Oh my God, I would move immediately. That would happen one fucking time. So next, we get a quick shot of a limousine pulling up outside an old church. The priest and the professor go in. And I felt like in my notes, I kept saying the priest and the professor all the time. So I was like, that'd be a good sitcom. Should we pitch that?
It was after Nanny and the Professor when they got rid of Nanny. They replaced her with the priest.
So the priest says that the man who died, now we're getting some explanation in the beginning, was a guardian priest who had lived in the church for over 30 years. He only went out once a week for food. So no DoorDash was happening back then. And he didn't talk. So that had to be crazy to go out once a week for groceries and not talk to anybody. I mean, it sounds a little appealing, to be honest.
I was going to say, where's the downside?
Maybe he was friends with that priest in the Sentinel who basically did the same thing, you know, like passed each other in the corner and, you know, go down the corridor and go to their respective doors.
They just see each other. They just nod because they know. So they open this door. They go down underground, which was a different set, I found out, altogether. The top of the church and the underground were two different places. But they do a great job of making it seem like it's the same place in this movie. Did this set feel creepy and sufficiently horror to you? Because I loved like the candles everywhere.
Loved the candles and then the metal spotlights. It's like it flowed really cool. I liked the look.
Did you get Mortal Kombat vibes, Dave, with all the candles?
I was waiting for like that one priest, that one silent priest to come by and lighting all the candles and then snuffing them out and replacing them.
Yeah, whose job is that? Because this old guy who was dying in his bed, who lived there for 30 years, was not doing that.
Every once in a while, he's got a shit ton of candles and he has to go replace the dead ones. It's tough being a priest when you're trying to keep an eye on Satan.
Babysit the devil juice and light the candles. That's what I did for 30 years.
What's even worse is he had to be alone because like it's not like you can go tell someone to go do this if you got a vow of silence. So you're kind of stuck.
That's what I'm saying. It's so weird. But sufficiently creepy. Yeah, totally dug the vibe. It was given everything. It really works. So apparently the Vatican has no idea that this brotherhood exists or existed. And this is a totally secret place to them. I call BS on that.
No, not true. I have a way to say that. How could they know they exist? The brother of sleep couldn't tell them.
But doesn't the Vatican know all, like they have their fingers in all of it and they know everything going on? That just seemed weird to me.
they're not Dionne Warwick.
I don't get that, but it's really funny anyway.
Truth be told, in the 80s, the Vatican had their hands filled with a lot of disturbing non-satanic shit going on.
True.
There were some priests who were talking in their sleep, I guess, and they were a bigger problem.
Yes, they had their hands full with that. That's true. Couldn't be bothered with the devil juice. Got other problems. So they enter the room with all these, so many candelabras. I swear to God, Liberace would be jealous. Just an insane amount of candelabras. Walls are covered with crosses and crucifixes, floor to ceiling. Creepy, really creepy. Even if you don't know what this movie's about yet, just this is creepy.
Yeah, they're keeping something in or something out. Either way, scary as hell.
Yeah. So they walk down this red carpet that paves the way right up to this giant glass cylinder with a green swirling liquid inside, which I have dubbed the devil juice.
Okay, inside it's the devil juice, but just when it's in the container, it's the holy lava lamp.
It does look like that. You're right. Or what's that drink? Is it Mountain Dew or is there a different version where it's like a neon green beverage, Gatorade maybe?
No, it's Mountain Dew. Yeah, I think you're right.
I was laughing. I was like, wow, that just looks wrong. So next to the cylinder is this old book written in multiple languages. We get a quick shot of that. They discuss how things all started to change about a month ago around them and they can feel the power. Okay.
I really wanted Donald Pleasance to say it, you know, preach your thing and do the, can you feel the power?
Death has come to your shitty old church.
That's the line we were missing. You're right. So we cut to two of our students from Birak's class, Redhead, and it's this kid, what's his name? Walter. We don't know his name is Walter yet. It's Dennis Dunn, and I recognized him from Big Trouble in Little China.
He was awesome in that.
Wasn't he? He's awesome in this because he's a whiny bitch, and I love to hate him.
Yeah.
So he and Redhead are talking about Schrodinger's cat.
I think this is where Sheldon Cooper got it as a child. Young Sheldon saw this movie and he went forward with this Schrodinger's cat and he tortured Penny with it for seasons because he saw Prince of Darkness in 1988 on home video.
I think Meemaw you're
brought
right.
it home and it fucked Sheldon up for life.
No, Meemaw can do no wrong. I love her. Okay, this is where we have to talk about this for a second because I am not familiar with Schrodinger's cat or any of this. So she says, until the cat is observed by someone, he is not in any definite state, alive or dead. What? Just what? If nobody is observing me in my house, there's no hidden camera that I'm unaware of. I'm sure I'm alive. Nobody's observing me, but I'm alive. So yes. What?
But that's the thing is you're alive. So it's like people outside, they don't know of your existence. It's a real brain breaker. I've looked it up several times and it's basically like saying like, until you know the actual outcome, anything is possible. So any outcome is a possibility until you know for certain what it is.
Yeah, I think it's Carpenter's way of saying the devil is neither alive nor dead until we see him. And we got a thermos full of him down in the basement.
Like you're taking him to your kid's little league game. Then grab the thermos.
Mom, can I have a sip of Satan?
Then she wraps that up by saying, wow, that kid's fast. We drank some of the devil juice. So she wraps that up by saying, it's only when you open the box and observe the cat does he materialize into reality. That whole Schrodinger thing just had my head spinning because I was like, I guess what you're saying, Dave, is unless somebody comes in my house and sees me that I'm actually alive and not lying on the floor dead, then I materialize. She's alive. Like, I guess that's the gist of that, but it's still stupid to me.
It's quantum physics and it's theory. So it's like, it's very different, but it's not like it's you exist. It's like, you just don't know if the person's alive or dead. So you could be any state. I mean, you could be on the shitter for all we know.
I never got past algebra 2. So I'm willing to go with quantum physics explains that.
See, that's where I'm at too, bro. Math is not my thing, as listeners know. Me and math, no bueno. Like if I had to do long division in my head to save the human race, y'all be dead.
I failed it, but like I'm so fascinated by science these days that I will just still listen to it, even though I look like an idiot.
So they rush to class and find that students are out in the hall. There's a note on the door requesting specific students report to Professor Birak's office at 4 p.m. and cancel all of their weekend plans. So Mustache Man and Redhead introduce themselves to each other. So we find out that they are Brian and Catherine. Doesn't fucking matter. I'm still calling them Mustache and Redhead.
They're better names.
So they walk and talk, and we learn that they are physicists, or studying to be physicists. Yeah, that's the word. So they talk physics, and then basically he says she's prettier than the usual physics student. She calls him sexist and gets offended, and he says, oh, I'm just joking. So did you guys find anything wrong with that remark, honestly?
Which one?
No.
Saying, oh, you're prettier than most physics students. Was he just hitting on her, or was he being a sexist pig?
I don't know. I looked around the class and I think she stood out. So I think he's correct.
All right. Validation. I like it.
I think his only mistake would be after the, oh, well, that's sexist. And he's like, no, it's just a joke. I really think you're like actually ugly. I mean, that should have been the next natural line.
Well, he should have said that, because I felt looking at her, I mean, I'm sure she's a lovely woman, but in 87, she had the wrong hair for her face. She had the female shag mullet, which was super popular, but did not flatter anybody.
So is that called the shaggot?
It's hideous is what I call it. He's doing card tricks with his playing cards. Have you noticed this throughout the movie? And he does one here, like, I don't know, sleight of hand, something or other. I feel like this dude has zero game.
Yeah, but all it takes him is a cup of coffee and he bangs her. So he's winning.
I mean, I'm easily impressed, but come on, you're doing a card trick. That's a little bit lame.
I have no game, and I watch this guy just buy her coffee and then wake up next to her. I'm like, shit, all those years I tried and I got nothing. And this guy just buys a fucking cup of coffee.
It's because the stash. She was mesmerized by the stash.
That's true.
See, were you rocking a stash, Ted? Is that why you needed the stash? See?
The standalone stash never worked on the East Coast. I couldn't pull it off.
I don't think it even worked on the West Coast.
They agree to a dinner date, but then later they're going to go meet Birak in his office. He tells five students. So we got Brian and Catherine show up. Then we've got Walter. Then we've got a blonde woman. We don't know who her name. And dude that looks like Brian Wilson. And or that Brian Wilson just gave up.
I thought he looked like the human version of Homer Simpson.
So, yeah, I say that because, and you do, because he's bald on top with a mullet in the back, which, again, never flatters anybody. Don't do it.
I beg to differ. One man in human history was ever able to pull off that look.
Bald on top, mullet in the back? Who?
The immortal Hulk Hogan. It looked amazing on that man.
Okay, I'll concede only because he wears the handkerchief, whatever he's got. What the fuck is it called? Around his face, his head?
Bandana.
Thank you. Yeah. So he does that. That kind of masks a little bit of the bald. This dude, he's just letting it fly for the world to see. And I don't like it. So the professor now tells them he's volunteered their services. You're welcome, guys. You're coming with me to the archdiocese for the weekend. But he's not telling them what it is until they get there. Does my grade depend on this? Because otherwise I got plans, bro.
And then he does, in fact, tell them your grade will be enhanced if you come with me.
That's incentive, I think, for most.
Yeah.
So outside the church, Professor Birak notices a homeless woman with her shopping cart full of trash and acting kind of weird. She's staring up at the sky. She's got bugs on her because we do a close-up. Ants on her face and shit. No! Also, I was thinking to myself, because I did the research first, this is where they employed a bug wrangler. How do they keep little ants that are individually like walking on somebody's skin? How do you wrangle them without losing them in the hair, or they fall in the, or like crushing them?
I was thinking that when I was watching it, like, now that woman deserves like major kudos, because I'd be afraid they're going to run right up my nose. And then I got a head full of ants and my day's gone.
That's not scary if you have the right ant or ant wrangler though, because then like, you know, the guy knows the name of every single ant. So he's like, you know, hey, Billy, don't crawl on her head. You know, whistles, the ant comes. So you just have to get a really proper ant handler,
I suppose. So now we join a conversation between the priest and the professor, already in progress. The priest says that it's critical they translate the book and prove it scientifically. The professor says nobody wants to know that bullshit. He says it's been locked up for 2,000 years. Why open it now? And the priest says no prison can hold him now.
How do they know?
Yes, how do they know? And maybe if y'all just locked the door and left, he'd stay in his lava lamp.
Right. It's Schrodinger. If you don't know he's there, he can't fuck with you.
Oh my God, you made that bit make sense. You're right.
And how do they know that no jail can hold him if they haven't translated the book yet?
Yes. They just jumped to a lot of conclusions right here. And I'm like, okay.
They did. There was a lot of plans that they failed on. I mean, like, it's a giant lava lamp with basically an ancient evil in it. Just put on some Jimi Hendrix, you know, light some incense, smoke some doobies, and then you're all set. He's not going to leave. He's just going to hang out and chill.
We're the Dream Idiots.
Every week we tell each other and you stories.
From history, from current events, from our own misadventures.
Each episode is like a box of chocolates. There's a nasty coconut surprise waiting, hiding somewhere.
Not quite, but there are curse words, insane quizzes, and even the occasional guest genius with a story of their own.
Oh, well, wow, Brian, that's much better than a nasty coconut surprise.
Yes, Morris, yes it is.
Dream Idiots. New episodes drop every Tuesday on a whole bunch of podcast platforms.
This episode is brought to you by Truly Unique Jewelry. You're a one-of-a-kind, so it's unique, spelled Younique. With all of the jewelry options mass-produced for each season, you're left wanting more when it comes to pieces that showcase your individual style. Head over to trulyuniquejewelry.com and scroll through handmade one-of-a-kind options for every budget, with pieces starting under a dollar. Beautiful costume jewelry to fit every age and every budget. Custom orders are also available for no additional charge, and they flat rate ship so you can fill your jewelry box with matching pieces for every outfit in your closet for one shipping fee. From earrings to bracelets to necklaces, even rosaries and combination sets. Cost is no longer a barrier to having the looks that you want that scream uniquely you. Go to the Facebook page for Truly Unique Jewelry for updates and discount information when you follow the page. Feel good about supporting a small business while you're updating and expanding your jewelry collection, adding pieces for every occasion. Visit trulyuniquejewelry.com. And remember, it's unique spelled Younique. And now, back to the show.
Now, see, that's a movie I'd watch. So we cut to nighttime and Mustache is waiting for Catherine. He asks her to go to coffee. She says, okay. And then I'm not sure exactly how much time has elapsed because, like you said earlier, Ted, they just wake up in bed together the next shot. But things happen that it makes me feel like more time has elapsed. They haven't just had the one night together because of the way the movie is going. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, he walks out on the porch with his shirt wide open like he's in a 1970s Winston commercial. And it's like, wow, he's got the stash. He's got the open shirt. He's looking soulfully at the supernova.
Is that what's making the sky like change colors because of this supernova that was discovered?
It's either that or just the trashy LA sky. I'm going supernova.
It's more pleasant to think about than all the pollution. That's true. So at this point, when they wake up together in bed, the first thought I had, I have this thought every time I watch it. Apparently, card tricks, sexist jokes, and a healthy mustache is all it took in the 80s to get women into bed. I think you were doing it all wrong, Ted. I'm just saying.
Told you I had no game.
He's noticing the haze in the sky, and then he takes coffee to her to wake her up, and they proceed to have what I thought was a bizarre conversation where it seems like he's gonna tell her he loves her, which again is why I assumed there has been a time elapse that we're unaware of, because you don't love somebody after one night.
Especially not after that, because like that jump cut made it seem like it was 30 seconds of unpleasant sex and then automatically like, hey, baby, I love you. Let's have some coffee.
It was weird. Things just progressed way too quickly.
You think he's going to tell her he loves her, but she stops him and says, I don't want you to say what I think you're going to say. And the time with the church thing, and like he calls him into the office and says, cancel your plans because it's this weekend. and then they're sleeping together, but he loves her. It's like, where, what, somebody didn't write the timeline down correctly for this movie. I don't know.
Right.
Either that, or you're really underestimating how creepy Mustache Boy is. I mean, you know, he could just be the, you know, wham, bam, I'm in love with you. Let's have some Folgers coffee in the morning and let's go die with Satan in the weekend.
So we get a quick shot of a bunch of homeless people. We're supposed to, you know, guess that that's what they are based on the fact that they are wearing ragtag ensembles. They're filthy from head to toe. Some of them have shopping carts and they're just kind of wandering the street aimlessly.
Yeah, they could just be customers of Walmart for all we know.
So they're all standing there in a group looking up at the sky. The students roll up in a van now to this church. And this band of hobos we finally get to see is led by Alice Cooper.
My boy, Alice, who I met while he was making this movie.
How awesome is that? He's credited as Street Schizo. How cool was he for this?
He was awesome. I met him at a concert in 1986 in November in Boston. And it was the first time I ever met him. I've been a lifelong fan, and a friend introduced us. And we were talking, and we started talking horror movies. And he said, you know, I'm doing something for John Carpenter soon. And I'm like, oh, cool. That was the end of it. And I went home. A year later, I go to see him again, this time at a record release party for his album, Raise Your Fist and Yell. And I'm talking to him, and he goes, I just did a movie with John Carpenter. And Prince of Darkness, the song that he recorded for it, was on that album. And 3 weeks later, I go to the movies and I see Alice in it. It was really cool that I saw it from before he did it to when he did it to when it was out.
And they pan it and everything. And he says, you know, the street people don't have a leader. You know, it'd be great if you were kind of like the leader of this. Just, you know, a couple of face shots here and there. Okay, great. So he came and saw our show, and there's a part in our show where I take the mic stand and I shove it through the guy's chest and it comes out the back. In fact, him over there. And he loved that. The fact that it was a great trick, you know, you put it in and it had a CO2 cartridge that blew blood out, and the thing was on a spring, and it looked really real. And he goes, you know that mic stand thing? Yeah. He says, do you think you'll put a bicycle through a guy's chest? I said, sure, we could rig that. I was glad that there was no dialogue. Giving that character dialogue would have ruined it. He was just a tool. He had nothing to say about what he was doing. You know, if I'm supposed to put a bike through this guy's chest, then okay. You know? But I bragged about that for quite a long time. Still do.
That is awesome. And it makes me think about the movie soundtrack now. Like, that song isn't actually in the movie, though, correct?
Just barely. There's a part when you can hear it. It's like incidental music coming out of someone's headphones. You can just barely hear it at all.
Okay.
It's not that great a song. Carpenter probably got it and said, gee, thanks, Alice. And then that was it. I love Alice. That's not one of his best.
Right now, I just picture like Alice is going to listen to this when it comes out. He's like, damn it.
Oh, don't fool yourself. He's not listening to our trash. The four women in this group make their way to a room now with some cots, and they drop their bags, and they mention that this used to be a beautiful church in the 50s. Then we cut to Dr. Leahy arriving, and this is Peter Jason, who I just saw in They Live again. I was like, oh yeah, he's the Carpenter favorite. Love him. He has no clue why he's here. He's walking around going, what am I doing here? We see several men, including Dr. Burak now, setting up some just a shit ton of equipment. I don't know what they're doing in this main room. It's all manner of 80s stuff to make it look like you were doing some real science shit.
It's back when computers were friggin' huge. Like, there was no little desktop. They were wheeling and shit.
Yes, things had their own stands with wheels. They even have like a fucking, like a seismograph and so much stuff. Meanwhile, we get two other men walking inside. It's Mullet Guy, and I forget what his name was in this.
Mullins,
Dirk Blocker. Okay, so that's funny, Mullins, because I called him Mullet Guy in my notes.
That's what I was thinking when you kept saying Mullet Guy. I was like, his name's Mullins, so this is going to be great.
Yep, no, you're right. And then I didn't write this guy's name down. I should have. The glasses-wearing nerdy guy who works with Leahy. He reminded me of the guy from Revenge of the Nerds. Right? Or is that just me?
Speaking of Mullins, you know who Dirk Blocker is, right?
No, but he sounds like he should be doing porn.
He's son of Hoss.
Yeah.
His dad was on Bonanza. He was like Michael Landon's brother on the show.
Okay. I can picture that now. It took me a second.
He was also, he's one of the dumb guys on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Shut up.
Yep. The bald one.
The less fat one.
Yeah, the less fat one.
Oh my God. I love that show too. And I had no idea.
I had no idea until I went to look it up, because like, he looks so familiar. I thought he was in another Carpenter movie. So that's why I went to go look him up. And then I saw Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yeah. I was like, oh shit.
So these guys are complaining that they don't want to be there. They run into Susan, and this is the nerdy girl with glasses. You could make a drinking game out of this. I didn't, but you could. As many times as people refer to her, they say, Susan. And somebody goes, who? You know, the glasses, the radiologist. They say the radiologist, the glasses, like 15 times in this movie, because nobody fucking can remember Susan's name.
And at one point, someone finds the glasses on the floor, and the first thing he does not say is Susan's glasses, because that's all, that was her identity. Carpenter wrote her as Glasses Chick.
That was going to be my next comment. You are a freaking mind reader. Is that a lot of this cast, I wrote like mustache man, red hair girl, nerdy guy with glasses, because they have no other defining traits or personalities. They are the one thing.
They're
crazy.
Like the less attractive campers on a Friday the 13th. You know why they're there.
They're fodder. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when they bump into Susan, they take a shine to her. They're like, ooh, she's cute. And mullet guy says, well, she's a radiologist. So when he says that, my thought is, well, why is she there? What can a radiologist do for the devil juice? Like, help anybody?
Anybody? Got a clue. I don't know if you can x-ray devil juice. Maybe she was going to try.
Okay. They mention she's married. And the other guy asks, how married? Really, bro? Really?
I mean,
are you two supposed to hook up because you're both the only ones with glasses? Like, I don't know.
That's a possibility. I mean, I don't know. I'm not married. So I don't know. Like, maybe when you get married, there's like certain levels of marriage throughout the year. You know, it's like a video game. It starts off at level one. And the more experience you get, you kind of work your way up to the boss level. So maybe they're not fully married yet.
The boss level. So Leahy's assistant is the nerdy guy with glasses. So Leahy comes in and tells him, set up my gear, even though I don't know why. I don't know why we're here, but set it up anyway.
How do you know what gear to bring? But they tell you, we're not going to tell you shit. You're going to get there, but bring all your gear.
And the fact that all this gear takes a U-Haul truck. It's not like he's just taking in a laptop. Like, there's a lot that goes into this.
Yeah.
That goes back to your whole, like, you know, time thing. Like, how much time did it take to set this up? Like, this seems like this took like a month to get all this equipment in, set it up.
Yeah. Then we get Walter, young Asian guy. He's whining to Mustache that he has a date tonight and I have to miss it. He's real pissed about it. And Mustache jokes, why? Where were you going to take him? I was like, ooh, no. Insinuating that it wasn't going to be a lady, which fine, but I don't know. Is that funny still? I didn't think it was.
In the 80s, it was funny, I'm sure. Is it like, now it's not as funny?
I don't know. It's kind of ironic that the guy spent half the movie locked in a closet.
There's layers to Carpenter. We're finding the layers.
Oh.
I know you're giving him too much credit, Ted, but that was fucking brilliant.
Oh, man.
Holy shit. And the fact that he has, we'll get to it later, no idea how to flirt with or relate to these women.
Oh, yeah, no, he's got nothing.
I mean, he has worse game than Mustache. Worse. So three more men approach now, and they all look out the window, and they see all these homeless people standing outside, staring at the church, effectively creepy to me. They're just like statues, just standing there. So then Dr. Calder introduces himself as a microbiologist, and this is where we get our Turkeyverse connection for this episode. So Calder is Jesse Lawrence Ferguson from
the greatest movie of all time, Darkman.
That's him. That is him from the opening scene of Darkman. This guy, I've only seen him in Darkman and this. I'm wondering if I look at his IMDb, am I going to find him in like Heart of Darkness or Angel Heart or some other movie that's like the typical 80s, we cast a black man to be a voodoo priest type of roles, because he seems like he would be really good at it because he's fucking creepy in this movie later on.
You don't get to see how good of an actor he is in Darkman like this. Like, you really got to see. I forgot he was in it until I watched it again. I was like, oh shit, this is amazing how well he's doing.
Was he in Serpent and the Rainbow? I'm trying to remember. I think he was.
Now, see, that's what I was talking about. That'd be right up his alley because he would excel at that. And I didn't look at his IMDb, but maybe.
And another live entertainment movie, which they're the ones who produced Prince of Darkness. And that was when Wes Craven did a couple of movies for Alive.
Okay.
He did Shocker and People Under the Stairs. And I wonder if maybe he's out of Wes Craven's central casting.
That's a really good point. I'll have to look up his IMDb after this. Speaking of People Under the Stairs, I have to do a side note with Dave real quick. When we were recording Silver Bullet, we completely dropped the ball and failed to mention that Everett McGill, the priest in that, Reverend Lowe, was in People Under the Stairs. The fucking creepy dude, the dad.
I completely missed that.
Yeah, me too. Completely forgot to mention it on our Silver Bullet episode. Anyway, I digress. So we cut to young Asian woman. There's like one of everybody in this movie. There's the Asian girl, the Asian boy, the nerdy girl, the nerdy boy, the mullet girl, the mullet boy. Like, there's one of everything.
It's the Noah's Ark of horror movies.
Staying on point with the religious theme. Good job. She's looking at this old book and she's the translator because Dr. Birak is talking with her and she says she's studying theology, more specifically analysis of ancient scriptures. Like, okay, now we know why she's here. That makes sense. So she starts typing and we get to see on the screen, it says, I, Jesus, have sent mine angel to testify unto you this thing which shall be unleashed. Okay. I don't know. Carpenter made that up. He must have, right?
We're kind of finding out that Jesus was an extraterrestrial here.
Yes. It's so weird. So we see outside, all of the bums are watching Donald Pleasance arrive. He's greeted by that homeless woman from earlier with the ants on her face, who grabs his hand. I needed my Purell just watching this scene. And holds a cup of maggots. We needed the maggot wrangler here.
That's right.
Oh, it's so gross.
I was surprised by the product placement. I didn't even know Starbucks was around at that time.
Oh, so Birak greets him inside and they take almost everyone down to the room with the green devil juice. We get quick scenes of more book translating. Redhead is typing long mathematical equations into her computer. Then she looks up and sees a clump of worms stuck to the outside of her window. I was like, what? The worms, earthworms just like hang on a window like that? So they're standing around talking about the devil juice and Blondie is saying, why aren't we taking samples and testing it? And that was where my head was at. I was like, yeah, why wouldn't we be just directly testing this like science brain? I mean, we know they shouldn't because they're going to let the devil out if they do, I guess. Yeah.
The only thing I can figure is that, you know, like maybe, I mean, like I said, it's a good point. They should be doing it. So maybe she's bringing it up because the priest told Birak. Every time any one of us says Birak, my mind automatically goes to Boobenstein now. So, but maybe he told them like, hey, we're not supposed to open it. So like they all know they're not supposed to open it now.
That could be.
So Mustache tells them maybe this substance is toxic. And he shows them a computer monitor that's set up down there with math equations that are just popping up on the screen. And he says, Catherine, the redhead, is entering in these equations upstairs, translated from 2,000-year-old Latin. And apparently one of them comments that this was before these kinds of equations were even invented. They weren't invented 2,000 years ago. I don't understand where she's getting the equations from because the other bitch has the book.
Yeah, they're on different floors. That doesn't work.
It's the devil talking through them.
So we cut to Redhead and another guy noticing some more worms are hanging out outside on the windows. Then we see more translation from the book that says the Prince of Darkness was himself sealed. Birak seems spooked by this, but he gets interrupted by the radiologist girl with the glasses who tells him they have nothing to worry about because the lid won't open. And she shows him a film x-ray. See, look. The radiologist has come through.
And why didn't someone just get one of those rubber things and twist the lid off?
Because there's corrosion on the lid, you see.
Bang it on the counter like you do the pickle jar, right?
Night falls now, and some more bums are gathering outside, a big horde of them. Inside, it's junk food heaven in the kitchenette room.
Yes.
Did you notice that, Dave? Because you notice food in movies.
Oh, I did. Chinese food, pizza, even the apple looked delicious.
Oreos, coffee, Oreos, beer. So Blondie points out to young Asian guy that the bums are all gathering outside in the back alley as well. She points out that she's got this bruise on her arm from earlier. She's not sure how she got it. And it's getting bigger, but, you know, moving on. She's like, that's weird. Anyway.
That was a badass bruise, by the way.
Yeah. At first, you're like, what the hell was she doing? Maybe moving that computer, you know, all that heavy equipment.
Well, we saw how she got it because we saw when she bumps into the like the computer or the thing. So it's like for her to say, oh, I don't know how I got it. It's like, how stupid are you?
Hey, I will kind of defend it because the older I get, the more I've noticed, I'll just be sitting around and I'll look down and be like, now, how the hell did I do that?
Yeah.
I won't remember a scratch or a bruise. Like, what?
Yeah, but she's not old, though. She's supposed to be like a college student.
Very true. So Walter, the Asian guy, says maybe that bruise is nerves because when I was 12, I got hives from homosexual panic.
There's the closet thing again. Oh, very deep, Mr. Carpenter.
You know, I got to give Ted credit. He really pointed out, like, I didn't catch it until now, but it's like, okay, the first joke. And then Walter makes a joke. He's terrible at flirting with women. He gets trapped in the closet. There's something there. There's a conspiracy.
Homosexual panic. I just rolled my eyes. I was like, really, bro? Okay. So Leahy's assistant, nerdy guy with glasses, goes outside to leave. He's taken off. He gets killed in the back alley by a bunch of the bums start to close in on him from both sides. And then Alice Cooper, the street schizo, grabs piece of a rusted bicycle that's sitting there and just rams him straight through his stomach. The best part of this is the after shot because it's one wheel and a frame and he's like leaning forward on it, like sort of still standing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great shot. I like that. I've never seen anyone killed by a bike before, impaled by a bike. I loved seeing that.
That was very cool. And that was a prop that they used on Alice's Nightmare Returns tour in 1986. So Alice kind of brought the impaling with him.
Which is what you want in your horror movie. This was a great first kill. It was really cool.
That's cool. I mean, and I love the fact that, you know, that makes Alice Cooper seem even cooler, that he kind of like almost brought the idea with them. You want to see him do more horror movies now.
Yeah, I didn't look at his IMDb. I should have. Has he done other stuff in horror?
He has. He's done quite a bit. He was in Monster Dog around the same time, late 80s. He was in Dark Shadows with Johnny Depp a few years ago. He's been on the fringe for years.
Okay. Huh. Back inside now, Mustache asks to speak to Bierak. Tells him the fluid appears to be a life form or growing organism of some kind. My question was, how do you know that?
He licked the jar.
Ew! So foul. Downstairs now, girl nerd with glasses tells a guy that she has effectively carbon dated the corrosion on the lid of the cylinder, and it is 7 million years old.
Yeah, you don't want to lick that jar.
So we've established I'm no scientist. However, I did Google carbon dating. It only works for fossils and organic matter formed from carbon. They can go as far as 50 to 60,000 years with a one carbon dating, and it cannot be used on non-living things such as stone, metal, or pottery. So somebody tell me how she was able to carbon date corrosion on this cylinder.
We'll never know because the secret died with her.
You're so right.
I didn't see that coming.
So she's alone with the cylinder and she notices that it's leaking some of its green liquid out of the top, but it's going up to form a pool on the ceiling. Really, really fucking cool. I love that about this movie, right?
Great shot. I love that.
The movie's so good, it defies gravity.
Cut to a young Asian translator chick telling Birak that she was able to recover stuff almost erased from the book. She's that good.
Well, I mean, is it really that she's that good, or is it just because we all know erasers suck? I mean, the longer it's in the page, no matter how much you erase it, there's going to be, you know, marks.
She put a piece over it and was like rubbing it to do the little, you know, the chalk etching so she could see what it was said.
I mean, really, you got to go to college to learn that. I learned that in like grade school.
She tells them the container has been buried for eons and it was in the Middle East. And this is where this weird mythology that he is creating gets confusing to me. They say this container was buried by the father of Satan.
It's a time capsule for Satan.
Satan's time capsule. So the father buried his son inside. And then in a later passage, Christ is warning them about this. My question was, why?
Yeah, so the father of Satan, the devil,
buried him.
Would be God. So God buried him.
Okay.
No,
I was confused by this.
Okay, yeah, that's the thing. It's like the devil is Lucifer, a fallen angel, so he is a son of God. God would have buried him. God's the father.
Okay, so put a pin in that, because when we get to the finale, I've got questions.
Oh, yeah, no, it makes sense here, but when you get later to the movie, it totally screws it up.
Downstairs, Glasses Girl gets a mouthful of this green devil juice because it shoots from the ceiling directly into her open mouth.
All I put in my notes is Satan just pissed on Susan.
It's so bizarre. And like in all movies where something has to squirt into someone's mouth, porn being the exception.
Yeah.
the actors always manage to move their head and open their mouth just right. So they make sure that it gets in their mouth.
Yep.
It's so awkward because she's like trying to make sure she gets it.
I kept waiting for her to go like, no, not in my eye, not in my eye.
I said porn being the exception. So she falls on the floor and is gagging and she's so fucking dramatic about it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you be if Satan just pissed in your mouth?
So we cut now to the translator saying that people didn't believe Christ. They thought he was crazy and eventually killed him. But the disciples kept his secret and decided to hide this thing away until one day civilization could become sophisticated enough to prove that Christ was right, that the devil was indeed in the cylinder. I'm just rolling with it at this point. I'm like, okay, whatever.
I mean, to be fair, you know, society was not ready for pickled Satan at this point.
And the sophistication they were waiting for was a bunch of grad students at a community college?
With these ridiculous equipment. Yeah, it's crazy.
I want to see that passage written in the book, though, and thou shall come a group of college students that will like end the world.
Thou shall assemble at Applebee's and discuss.
Only after some coffee and card tricks. So Leahy asks why the Catholic Church kept this a secret for 2,000 years. And the priest does a little monologuing here. I love he rants about the church and, you know, when really the answer is, wouldn't it still be a secret if that priest hadn't died? I mean, really, we wouldn't know, right?
Right. End of time should have happened and no one would have guessed.
But I do love this monologue, this little rant, because this is Donald Pleasance in his element, doing what he do.
He's loomising.
That man cannot make a bad movie. I would watch him do anything.
Oh, he made Halloween 5.
So next, Mustache pulls Birak over to a seismograph, which measures earthquakes and movement underground. So I didn't understand why they had this at all.
Maybe it was because they figured, you know, a bunch of horny college kids, you know, things were going to get frisky. They wanted to like see how much the earth moved.
If this church is a rockin'. they look at the machine and he tells him it just now detected a burst of energy from the cylinder of devil juice. And they know by looking at this that it was in a straight line with precision less than a less than a millisecond. Now, hold on. First of all, this machine doesn't do that. It doesn't measure that, correct?
They needed all that shit back then. If they made this movie now, they could tell it all with an iPhone.
Also, how are they measuring time with this machine, with any of their stuff? How do they know that that burst of energy, which did not come from the cylinder, it came from the puddle on the ceiling, thank you very much. How do they know any of that? I was like, really?
As far as the time thing goes, maybe that's in the way that you read it. Like, we don't know. We're not scientists. So maybe like there's a way that they can kind of read the measurements and they can factor out like mathematically how the time works out. As far as the rest of it goes, I don't know. You baffled me on that one.
The movie baffled me. That's the problem. I was trying to follow it. I really was.
I can't believe you're going to sit there and follow the plot about a movie that just had the devil's piss go into a woman's mouth from a puddle of piss in the ceiling. That whole thing just baffled me. I gave up at that point. I was like, just movie rollout.
Walter, I'm just going to chalk it all up to quantum physics. I don't understand that. I don't even know what it is.
Apparently it has something
to do with
devil
pee. I don't know what quantum of solace was. Quantum loses me.
Ant-Man and the Quantum whatever.
Again, didn't understand it, but I like the costumes.
So Walter asks if they are all seriously, like, are they really believing this? Are you guys taking this seriously? So we cut to nerdy glasses chick who no longer needs her defining glasses. Devil juice corrected her vision. Mustache tells Burak that a kinetic emission came from the cylinder. What?
The cylinder was played by Jamie Gillis. Kinetic emission.
Oh. Yeah, I was like, really? But Carpenter's tried. He tried. The guys, they tried when they were writing this. They now surmise that the cylinder can also probably move objects instantaneously across a distance like psychokinesis, mind directing energy.
That's smart devil juice.
And I also would posit that we have not seen that happen yet. It hasn't moved anything. What? So Burak says that Mustache has to prove that that movement was not a power surge or a draft of air before you tell anybody else about it, that this devil juice is alive. They are not in the movie that they think they're in, I think is part of the problem with all this delivery of the science gobbledygook. Like, do you guys forget you're in a horror movie? Like, this is crazy.
They thought they were auditioning for Oppenheimer.
Exactly. So Walter sees that nerdy girl no longer needs her glasses and is possessed with devil juice, but he doesn't realize that that's what's happened. He's talking to her. He's standing there just chomping on an apple, talking away, doesn't notice that she's not moving, not answering him, nothing, just standing there staring at him, and goes into the room where Asian translator chick is now chilling. He offers her a beer, tells her she could pass for Asian. No game, this guy. Zero.
Yeah, she was not impressed.
She rolls her eyes and walks out, like doesn't even say anything. I mean, that's bad. That's like me looking at Dave going, you know, you could pass for white. Dave's like, hold me back. That was a good one. That's zero game. Zero.
He's blowing it on purpose. He secretly wants Mustache Man.
I think you're right. So dude comes in, asks where Susan is, and he follows possessed chick down to the basement. This is Brian Wilson, bald on top mullet guy. Then we cut to Mustache and Redhead just chatting. He tells her a controlled force of power is down there and it's reaching out and influencing and moving objects by thought alone. Is it though?
To be fair, of all the people saying those lines, who are you going to believe saying it the most? Like, who are you going to think is going to believe this shit? It's Homer Simpson.
No, Mustache is the one saying this. Because his seismograph picked it all up, see, and told him all the answers.
Mustache, Mustache is the number two on the list of people I would believe that believes this, because anyone who tries to rock that mustache is not quite right.
Whereas Homer Simpson guy is just like, green liquid. You know, he doesn't know.
He would be the one that would lick the jar.
Devil juice makes me warm in my tummy.
Down in the basement, he's looking for Susan. He finds her glasses, like Velma. She's lost her glasses. Then we go over to a machine that does we don't know what, and it starts beeping at him rapidly. Don't know what it's detecting. Susan sneaks up behind him and snaps his neck. Boop, done. You're dead. No suspense. Yeah.
Just very, very easily snapped his neck.
I'm guessing the green devil juice gives her Hulk strength.
It would have to like move that melon and snap that meaty ass neck. I mean, that's some strength.
I can snap a chicken bone sometimes. And she just went, whoop.
Right? And there's no suspense to it at all, which kind of bummed me out, because horror movie, build the suspense a little. So we cut now to Burak telling the priest that suppose that your faith is correct and that there is a universal mind that controls everything, a God that wills the behavior of every subatomic particle, and of course there would be antiparticles, the mirror image or the negative side. He posits that God could possibly reside in that mirror image instead of the universe. Maybe he's an anti-God and he brings darkness instead of light. My head exploded at this point, trying to follow all of this.
Suppose what your faith has said was essentially correct. Suppose there is a universal mind controlling everything, a God willing the behavior of every subatomic particle. Now, every particle has an antiparticle, its mirror image, its negative side. Maybe this universal mind resides in the mirror image instead of in our universe as we wanted to believe. Maybe he's anti-God, bringing darkness instead of light.
Why weren't we told the truth?
Without the technology to confirm, it would have been another legend.
But he was our prisoner, not yours.
We had a responsibility to warn the rest of the world. Only the corrupt are listened to now. They tell us what we want to hear. We believe it to be divine light.
Yeah, that was a lot to absorb, but we needed it for later in the movie, so I'll go with it.
That's how I feel about this whole movie. We're breaking it down and picking it apart to have fun with it, but really, it works because that's what's happening in the finale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think about it, but this movie is like, it literally is explaining. I mean, like, not just showing you explanations like most movies do, like they're showing you the way to the end. This movie is literally explaining to you what is going to happen at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
After all of that, my mind just went, so you're saying the devil, that there's God and the opposite is the devil. After all that explanation, that's why I went, oh, okay.
This is a scientist, so... You know, usually science religion does not mix. So maybe this was his way of like, oh, God is real. Devil is real. One is good. One is bad. Now I get it.
So Donald Pleasance's line delivery, as only Donald Pleasance can, gets kind of mad. And he's like, why weren't we told the truth?
Because the Donald priest Pleasance was asleep.
And he couldn't talk.
That's a double whammy.
After this conversation, we cut to outside where Mullet, Calder, and other random guy are standing in a deserted parking lot behind the building. And Calder is very excited about the discovery, while Mullet says that Burak and the priest are Looney Tunes. Calder and other random guy go back inside. And then Mullet starts ranting because he's irritated at all this. And he goes... This is caca.
I like that.
Caca. So good. It's weirdly timed, though, because this isn't a tense moment where we need a moment of levity. It's just super random. It's a grown man saying, this is caca.
I don't think it was meant to be funny. I think like someone actually wrote this like, you know what? This guy does not seem like the kind of man who's going to cuss.
This movie is rated R. You could say bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's allowed.
Maybe he was trying to protect his image because, you know, he did look like he was dressed to go like directly from this movie to like an audition for Miami Vice.
He turns around. Now he's outside alone to see no less than 20 homeless people lined up in the near distance, staring at him. Then Susan, who is already possessed by devil juice, comes out of the building and she's got cockroaches crawling on her hands. Ew.
Yeah.
I guess the whole theme of bugs in this movie is just to emphasize the devil yuckiness of it all. What was your take on that with all the bug stuff?
I think it was the bugs and the homeless people count as the lower forms that he's easily able to control.
Oh, okay. So Mustache wasn't totally wrong when he said it could control things. Got it.
Yeah. Didn't even think of that.
Didn't think of that in all these years.
Me neither.
I never picked it up with the bugs. The bugs never caught to me. The homeless one, I kind of figured because, you know, homeless people are supposed to be crazy. Supposed to be. I mean, I've met some nice ones. Once you give them a dollar, they're cool.
Well, you think of the First Power, Dave, how the devil influence worked on the homeless people or people who were alcoholics, people who were easily, their mind was compromised in some way. Maybe that's sort of the same thing here.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking of. That's why I kind of figured it was, which is funny that you bring it up because I actually kind of got a First Power vibe off of this, which would be or interesting if that's where they kind of got the influence for First Power.
This was a few years before.
See, I got some good ones every now and then.
So he notices now cockroaches are on him and they're gathering at his feet, a pool of cockroaches. Again, needed the bug wranglers because I would not be able to do this. How did this guy not step on any of these accidentally?
Yeah. How do you stand there in a pool of cockroaches?
And they're on you too, like on your arms and your hands.
The things that were crawling on him, I'm pretty sure they were beetles.
Yes, ones on his pant legs were beetles.
Yes, the cockroaches were on his hands or something, weren't they?
Yeah, and the beetles were on his pants.
That's right.
Too much for me.
I can handle beetles. Beetles, I like beetles. I think they're cute bugs. Cockroaches are not.
He gets bum-rushed by a bum with scissors, and it's not a very satisfying death for an R-rated movie.
They tell you running with scissors is bad, and this was proof.
Yeah, she stabs him a few times, but it's nothing gory or over the top. Not gratuitous, which is what I want in my horror movie, honestly.
Yeah.
That didn't bother me. My only issue with it was like, I wanted his dying words to be caca.
All right, listeners, that is going to wrap up part one of our discussion on The Prince of Darkness. Ted and Dave have had me rolling and tears coming down my face. I'm hoping that you all are enjoying it as well. I apologize that the audio on this isn't the best, but it does improve in part two. I don't know if it was the Wi-Fi connection or what the problem was. At the time of this recording, if you do want to watch Prince of Darkness, it is available on Peacock and pay streaming on Amazon Prime. Thank you all so much for listening, and until next time, goodbye.
But he was our prisoner, not yours. We had a responsibility to warn the rest of the world.
Hey, listeners, Drive-In Dave here saying we know you have a lot of options when it comes to podcasts, so we want to thank you so much for listening to ours. Please be sure to follow us on all your social media platforms. Join us in the Bad Movie Conversation. We're on Facebook with a Let's Talk Turkeys page, as well as a discussion group where you can chat with other people who also love bad movies. We're also on Instagram at Let's Talk Turkeys, all one word, plus we're on Twitter with the handle at Gobble Podcast. That's GOBBLEPODCAST. And of course, you can always email us direct at Let's Talk Turkeys, all one word, at yahoo.com.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.